The Third Saturday in Lent, Regulation of the Virtues by St. Gregory the Great, an allegorical interpretation of part of the first chapter of Job. Job's seven sons went and feasted in their houses, every one his day. The sons feast in their houses when the several virtues feed the mind after their proper sort, and it is well said, every one his day, for each son's day is the shining of each virtue. Briefly to unfold, then, these same gifts of sevenfold grace, wisdom has one day, understanding another day, counsel another, fortitude another, knowledge another, piety another, fear another. For it is not the same thing to be wise that it is to understand, for many indeed are wise in the things of eternity, but cannot in any sort understand them. Wisdom, therefore, gives a feast in its day, in that it refreshes the mind with the hope and assurance of eternal things. Understanding spreads a feast in its day, forasmuch as in it that it penetrates the truths heard, refreshing the heart, it lights up its darkness. Counsel gives a feast in its day, in that while it stays us from acting precipitately, it makes the mind to be full of reason. Fortitude gives a feast in its day, in that whereas it has no fear of adversity, it sets the viands and confidence before the alarmed soul. Knowledge prepares a feast in her day, and that in the mind's belly she overcomes the emptiness of ignorance. Piety sets forth a feast in its day, and that it satisfies the bowels of the heart with deeds of mercy. Fear makes a feast in its day, and that whereas it keeps down the mind, that it may not pride itself in the present things, it strengthens it with the meat of hope for the future. But I see that this point requires searching into this feasting of the sons, namely, that by turns they feed one another. For each particular virtue is to the last degree destitute, unless one virtue lends its support to another. For wisdom is less worth if it lacks understanding, and understanding is wholly useless if it be not based upon wisdom, and that whilst it penetrates the higher mysteries without the counterpoise of wisdom, its own lightness is only lifting it up to meet with the heavier fall. Counsel is worthless when the strength of fortitude is lacking thereto, since when it finds out by turning the thing over, from want of strength of it, it never carries on so far as to the perfecting indeed, and fortitude is very much broken down if it be not supported by counsel, since the greater power which it perceives itself to have, so much the more miserably does this virtue rush headlong into ruin without the governance of reason. Knowledge is not if that hath not its use for piety, for whereas it neglects to put in the practice that good that it knows, it binds itself the more closely to the judgment. And piety is very useless if it lacks the discernment of knowledge, in that while there is no knowledge to enlighten it, it knows not the way to show mercy. And assuredly, unless it has these virtues with it, fear itself rises up to the doing of no good action. For as much as while it is agitated about everything, its own alarms render it inactive and void of all good works. Since then, by reciprocal ministrations, virtue is refreshed by virtue, it is truly said that the sons feast with one another by turns, and as one aids to relieve another, it is as if the numerous offsprings to be fed were to prepare a banquet each his day. It follows, and sent and called for their three sisters to eat and drink with them. When our virtues invite faith, hope, and charity into everything they do as sons employed in labors, call their three sisters to a feast, that faith, hope, and charity may rejoice in the good work which each virtue provides, and they, as if it were to gain strength from that meat, whilst they are rendered more confident by good works. But what is there that we do in this life without some stain of defilement, howsoever slight? For sometimes by the very good things we do we draw near to the worst part, since while they beget mirth in the mind, they at the same time engender a certain security. And when the mind enjoys security, it unlooses itself in sloth, and sometimes they defile us with some self-elation, and set us so much the lower with God, as they make us bigger in our own eyes. Hence it is well added, and it was so, when the days of their feasting were gone about, that Job sent and sanctified them. For when the round of the days of feasting is gone about, to send to his sons and to sanctify them, is after the perception of the virtues, to direct the inward intention, and to purify all that we do with the exact sifting of a re-examination, lest things be counted good which are evil, or at least such as are truly good be thought enough when they are imperfect. For thus it is very often happens that the mind is taken in, so that it is deceived either in the quality of what is evil or the quantity of what is good. But these senses of the virtues are much better ascertained by prayers than by examinings. For the things which we endeavor to search out more completely in ourselves, we often obtain a true insight into by praying than by investigating. For when the mind is lifted up on high by the kind of machine of compunction, all that may have been presented to it concerning itself, it surveys the more surely by passing judgment upon its beneath its feet. Hence it is well subjoined. And rose up early in the morning, and offered burnt offerings according to the number of them all. For we rise up early in the morning, when we, being penetrated with the light of compunction, we leave the night of our human state, and open the eyes of the mind to the beams of the true light, and we offer a burnt offering for each sun, when we offer up the sacrifice of prayer for each virtue, lest wisdom may uplift, or understanding, while it runs nimbly, deviate from the right path, or counsel, while it multiplies itself, grows into confusion, that fortitude, while it gives confidence, may not lead to precipitation, lest knowledge, while it knows and yet has no love, may swell the mind, lest piety, when it bends itself out of the right line, may become distorted, and lest fear, while it is unduly alarmed, may plunge one into the pit of despair. When we pour out our prayers to the Lord in behalf of each several virtue, that it be free from alloy, what else do we but according to the number of our sons offer a burnt offering for each? For an holocaust is rendered the whole burnt. Therefore, to pay a holocaust is to light up the whole soul with the fire of compunction, that the heart may burn on the altar of love and consume the defilements of our thoughts, like the sins of our own offspring. But none know how to do this saving those who, before their thoughts proceed to deeds, restrain with anxious circumspection the inward motions of their hearts. The entrance to the mind must be fortified with the whole sum of virtue, lest at any time enemies with insidious intent penetrate into it by the opening of heedless thought. Hence Solomon says, "Keep thy heart with all diligence, for out of it are the issues of life." It is meet, then, that we form a most careful estimate of the virtues that we practice, beginning with the original intent, lest the acts which they put forth, even though they be right, may proceed from a bad origin, and hence it is rightly subjoined. For Job said, "It may be that my sons have sinned, and curse God in their hearts." Our sons curse God in their hearts when our righteous deeds proceed from unrighteous thoughts, when they put forth good things in public, but in secret desire mischief. Thus they curse God when our minds reckon that they get from themselves that which they are. They curse God when they can understand that it is from Him that they have received their powers and yet seek their own praise for His gifts. But it be not known that our old enemy proceeds against our good actions in three ways, with this view namely, that the thing which is done right before the eyes of men may be spoiled in the sight of the judge within. For sometimes in a good work he pollutes the intention, that all that follows in the doing may come forth impure and unclean, because it is hereby made to rise troubled from its source. But sometimes he has no power to spoil the intention of a good deed, but he presents himself in the action itself as it were in the pathway, that whereas the person goes forth the more secure in the purpose of his heart, evil being secretly there laid, he may as it well be slain from ambush. And sometimes he neither corrupts the intention nor overthrows it in the way, but he ensures the good deed at the end of the action, and in proportion as he feigns himself to have gone further off, whether from the house of the heart or from the path of the deed, with the greater craftiness he watches to catch the end of the good action, and the more he has to put a man off his guard by seeming to retire, so much the more incurably does he at times pierce him with an unexpected wound. For he defiles the intention in a good work, in that when he sees man's heart ready to be deceived, he presents to their ambition the breath of passing applause, that wherein they do all right, they may swerve by crookedness in the intention to make the lowest thing their aim. But when he is unable to corrupt the intention, he conceals snares which he sets in the way, that the heart, lifting itself up in that which is done well, may be impelled from one side to do evil, so that what at the outside it had set before itself in one way, it may go through and act so far otherwise than it had begun. For often whilst human praise falls to the glut of a good deed, it alters the mind of the doer. And though, not sought after, yet when offered it pleases, and whereas the mind of the well-doer is melted by the delight thereof, it is set loose from all vigorousness of the inward intention. Often, when our sense of justice has begun to set aright, anger joins in from the side, and whereas it troubles the mind of out of measure, but the quickness of our sense of uprightness, it wounds all the healthiness of our inward tranquillity. It often happens that sadness, attaching itself from the side as it were, becomes the intendant of seriousness of mind, and that every deed, which the mind commences with a good intention, this quality overcasts with a veil of sadness, and we are sometimes the slower in driving it away, even that what awaits it were in the solemn attendance on the depressed mind. Often, immoderate joy attaches itself to a good deed, and while it calls upon the mind for more mirth than is meet, it discards all the weight of gravity from our good actions. But when our old adversary neither deals a blow at the outside of the intention, nor intercepts us in the path of the execution, he sets the more mischievous snares at the end, which he so much the more wickedly besets, as he sees that it is all that is left for him to pray of. Now the prophet had seen these snares set out at the end of the course, when he said, "They will mark my heel." Whether then it be evil spirits, or all wicked men that follow in the steps of their pride, they mark the heel when they aim at spoiling the end of a good action, and hence it is said to that serpent, "It shall mark thy head, and thou shalt mark his heel." For to mark the serpent's head is to keep an eye upon the beginnings of his suggestion, and with the head of needful consideration, wholly to eradicate them from the avenues of the heart. Yet when he is caught at the commencement, he busies himself to smite the heel, and that though he does not strike the intention with his suggestion at the first, he strives to ensnare at the end. Now if the heart be once corrupted in the intention, the middle and the end of the action that follows is held in secure possession by the cunning adversary, since he sees that the whole tree bears fruit to himself, which he has poisoned at the root with his hateful tooth. Therefore, because we have to watch with the greatest care that the mind, even in the service of good works, be not polluted by a wicked intention, it is rightfully said, "It may be that my sons have sinned and cursed God in their hearts," as if it were said in plain words, that it is no good work which is performed outwardly, unless the sacrifice of innocency be inwardly offered for it upon the altar of the heart in the presence of God. The stream of our work, then, is to be looked through all we can, if it flows out pure from the wellspring of thought. With all care must the eye of the heart be guarded from the dust of wickedness, lest that which is in action it shows upright to man be within set awry by the fault of a crooked intention. We must take heed, then, that our good works be not too few, take heed that they be not unexamined, lest by doing too few works we be found barren, or by leaving them unexamined we be found foolish. For each several virtue is not really such if it be not blended with other virtues, and hence it is well said to Moses, "Take unto thee these sweet spices, stati, and onoka, and galbanum, of good scent, with pure frankincense. Of each there shall be a like weight, and those shall make it a perfume, and confection after the art of the apothecary, well tempered together and pure. For we make a perfume confounded of spices when we yield a smell upon the altar of good works with the multitude of our virtues, and this is tempered together and pure, and that the more we join virtue to virtue, the purer is the incense of good works we set forth. Hence it is well added, "And thou shalt beat them all very small, and put of it before the tabernacle of the testimony." We beat all the spices very small, when we pound our good deeds, as it were, in the mortar of the heart, by an inward sifting, and go over them minutely, to see if they be really and truly good. And thus to reduce the spices to a powder is to rub fine our virtues by consideration, and to call them back to the utmost exactitude of a secret reviewal. And observe that it is said that of the powder, "And thou shalt put of it before the tabernacle of the testimony." For this reason, and that our good works are then truly pleasing in the sight of our judge, when the mind bruises them small by a more particular re-examination, and as it were makes a powder of the spices, that the good that is done be not coarse and hard, lest if the closed hand of re-examination do not bruise it fine, it scatter not from itself the more refined odor. For it is thence that the virtue of the spouse is commended by the voice of the bridegroom, when it is said, "Who is this that cometh out of the wilderness like a rod of smoke, of the perfume of myrrh and frankincense, with all powders of the merchant?" For holy church rises up like a rod of smoke from spices, and that by the virtue of her life she duly advances to the uprightness of inward incense, nor lets herself run out of the dissipated thought, but restrains herself in the recesses of the heart by the rod of severity. And while she never ceases to reconsider and go over anew the things she does, she has in the deed myrrh and frankincense, but in the thought she has powder. Hence it is that it is said again to Moses of those who offer a victim, "And he shall flay the burnt offering, and cut it into pieces." For we strip the skin of the victim. When we remove the eyes of the mind, the overcast of virtue, and we cut in pieces when we minutely dissect its interior, and contemplate it piecemeal. We must therefore be careful that when we overcome our evil habits, we are not overthrown by our good ones running riot, lest they chance to run out loosely, lest being unheeded they be taken captive, lest from error they forsake the path, lest broken down by weariness they lose the meed of past labors. For the mind ought in all things to keep a wary eye about it. Aye, and in this very forethought of circumspection to be persevering, and hence it is rightly added, "Thus did Job all his days." For vain is the good that we do, if it be given over before the end of life, and that it is vain too for him to run fast, who fails before he reaches the goal. For it is hence that it is said of the reprobate, "Woe unto you that have lost patience." Hence truth says to his elect, "Ye are they that have continued with me in my temptations."